slipped the night of nights. No more rehearsing and nursing a part. We know every card by heart. Overture, curtain lights. This is it. We'll hit the heights. And oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show. This is it.
Welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda here on WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA, Hudson, Catskill. We are coming to you live from the Catskill studio. I am alone here, just me, Jenny, no Amanda, but it turns out I'm actually not alone. I have two very good friends sitting to my left, and it's so exciting to be here with them. Before I introduce them to you, I'm going to tell you about what's playing in the movie theaters around these parts. So, let's start. Let's start with Upstate Films, starting with the Star Cinema, which is the location in Rhinebeck. We have One Battle After Another, Architectural Archive, Anemone, and All the President's Men. Heading across the river to the new showroom in Kingston, which is called Upstate Midtown, we have Israel-Palestine on Swedish TV, 1958 to 1989, Secret Mall Apartment, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, Thief, Rafifi, and The Mastermind. And then over in Saugerties at the Orpheum Theater, we have Orwell, 2 + 2 = 5, One Battle After Another, The Smashing Machine, Roof Man, Wisdom of Happiness, Dalai Lama, and Springsteen, Deliver Me from Nowhere. And if you're interested in any of these movies or their showtimes, you can find out more information at upstatefilms.org. All right, it's just me tonight reading these, so bear with me as I find them on my telephone. Heading back to Hudson, at Story Screen Cinema, we have, it's loading, this week, One Battle After Another, The Smashing Machine, Good Boy, Kiss of the Spider-Woman, that's it for, oh, so sorry, not true, Black Phone 2, and that looks like all that's for new releases right now. Sorry, I'm navigating in real time. And then they always have some fun repertory screenings. Oh, looks like The Mastermind is also coming there soon, as well as If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, two movies I'm very excited for. But if you're interested in any of these showtimes or any of the other things that they have going on over at Story Screen, because they always have really fun repertory screenings, including some cool stuff for Halloween, you can find out more information at storyscreenpresents.com. All right. And now I'm walking down the street to the community theater in Catskill, which is where we are, just down the street from us. They have One Battle After Another, The Addams Family, and I believe tonight is the last night to see Cure, the Kiyoshi Kurosawa movie from the 90s. Upcoming, they have A Nightmare on Elm Street, X, Springsteen, Deliver Me from Nowhere, and The Mastermind. And then they also have some fun Halloween programming. So if you're interested in any of those movies or their showtimes, you can find out more at communitytheaterny.com. All right, we're almost done. Thank you for bearing with me. I am going to tell you about what's playing at TSL in Hudson, otherwise known as Time and Space Limited. So this week we have Predators, The Best Years of Our Lives, Angel Headed Hipster, which is includes a Q&A with director Ethan Silverman, Peacock, Plain Clothes, and How to Steal a Million. And that looks like it for this week, but they have some more stuff coming up. It looks like they're also going to be playing The Mastermind. Very exciting. To find out more information about these movies and their showtimes, you can find out more at timeandspace.org. All right, and now the last movie theater. Oh, actually, so sorry. I'm going to tell you about the drive-in because they're still open. One moment, please. Usually with Amanda here, you know, it gives you a little bit of time to pull up the next one. So I'm just going to vamp a little bit. At the drive-in, here we go, highwaydriveinny.com. Let me just give you that first. On screen one, we have Tron, Ares, and Fantastic Four. Screen two is Roofman and The Long Walk. Screen three is Good Boy and The Conjuring Last Rites. And screen four is Casper and Gabby's Dollhouse, the movie. And if you're interested in any of those movies, it looks the drive-in's closing pretty soon, so our time is running out. You can find out more information at highwaydriveinny.com. That's H-I-W-A-Y, driveinny.com. All right, and last but not least, I'm going to tell you about what's playing at Spotlight in Hudson on Fairview Avenue. We have, when this page loads, we have Tron Ares, Roofman, Kiss of the Spider-Woman, Bone Lake, The Smashing Machine, Eleanor the Great, and Gabby's Dollhouse, the movie. Oh, sorry, not yet done. One battle after another. The Strangers Chapter 2, Demon Slayer Infinity Cass, Downton Abbey Grand Final, Black Phone 2, Good Fortune, Truth and Treason, and Spirited Away 20th Anniversary. All right, and that's everything that's playing at Spotlight in Hudson. If you would like to find out more, you can go to spotlighttheater.com and select Hudson from the drop-down menu. It looks like they've got a lot going on, just like everybody does right now. It's kind of an amazing time to go see a movie.
It's a October. Great time.
The best month. My favorite month. I have with me here my two wonderful friends. Listeners of the show might recognize one of them, who was on for our Missions Impossible show a couple months ago. I have Chuck Ansbacher and Ellen Siebers.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Oh, speak up again, Ellen?
I don't think so.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
What's going on here? Bye.
Hello? Wait, speak up.
Hello?
Oh, it's not working. What's going on? I had you working before we started. What's gone wrong?
Maybe we could just...
Is that okay?
We'll use
Can you guys
one.
Romantically
Can
share?
Sunny and share this?
We can absolutely Sunny and share this.
It's so beautiful. Let me play around with some dials and see if I can get you going.
Is it not Downton Abbey Grand Finale?
Grand Finale. I think the end of it was cut off because it didn't. One of the other ones I read too, it seemed like it was only half a word.
So how do you feel about Roofman?
I don't know anything about Roofman. This is my first time hearing about Roofman. What the heck is that?
I have a theory about box office performance that the name of the movie is what drives the box office. And so I'm curious to see what Roofman does here. I think we've got your microphone working. Oh.
Yeah, Chuck has some incredible theories about name and performance of the box office.
Weapons, great name for a movie.
Uh-huh.
Great box office.
Yep.
Sinners, great name for a movie.
Totally.
One battle after another. Is this a good name for a movie?
This is the question.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say yes. I think
it is evocative.
I think it's very evocative. I don't think the trailer really told you anything about it, though.
No, I agree. The trailer was really mysterious, which was pretty exciting.
It was exciting, but also left me, as a PTA fan, incredibly anxious.
Yeah. Well, this is a great transition to talk about what the heck we're talking about tonight.
We're tap dancing all around it.
We're just so excited. As usual, which Amanda and I always do, and when we have a guest, we also always do, when, you know, before the show, we go and have a little snack and a drink, and we try so hard to not talk about what we're about to go talk about. And this was exceptionally difficult for us tonight.
It was really hard because this is a very exciting movie.
Well, it's an exciting topic.
Yes. Yes.
And so, what's the topic?
So tonight we are talking about, not only are we going to talk about One Battle After Another, the fresh, hot, new Paul Thomas Anderson movie that came out just a few weeks ago, but we are going to do a little bit of, you know, not a deep dive because we don't have a ton of time, but a gentle dipping our toe into.
We're going to like skip a stone over the surface of Paul Thomas Anderson's directorial
filmography.
Yeah.
Literally perfect.
Yeah.
We're all here today because we love his flicks. We love each other, and it's fun to watch movies.
That's absolutely so true.
Yeah. Let's do a little bit of One Battle After Another, I think, before we go any further.
Right. So we did not see this movie together.
We did not. We saw it separately, which is, you know, often we see, I think, Ellen, you were like, it feels wrong to not see the big Leonardo DiCaprio movie together. Because that we saw Killers of the Flower Moon together.
Yeah, normally anything that's like 3 hours, we're going to see it together. But I think we were all incredibly anxious to go and see it.
Yes.
And I had a lot of nerves, like I said, to see this because it's like, it felt like great stakes.
Yeah.
Why did it feel that way?
Because like he's our guy.
I felt very nervous as well about this movie, and I think a lot of it is because I had no freaking idea what it was about. The title doesn't really do much for me. All I knew is that Leonardo DiCaprio is wearing plaid. He's for the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem like a PTA movie to me very much, and. So I definitely felt strange about it.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of buzz about it before it came out.
Yeah.
A lot of highly anticipatory reviews. And then it's also, I think it was notably PTA's first movie in a long time that wasn't a period piece.
Since Punch Drunk Love.
Since Punch Drunk Love. Yeah. The rest have all been
over 20 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Totally. Which I think is significant and something to think about. For those in our audience who don't know, Paul Thomas Anderson is an American director who's been making movies since the 90s. When's Heart 8 from? I didn't watch it.
Heart 8 is 95 or 6,
oh, perfect.
Right?
Yeah.
So, Boogie Nights is 97.
Yeah.
So
I think actually a very American filmmaker. His movies feel very American.
Incredibly,
to me.
Yes.
And a very acclaimed filmmaker. I think probably his most famous movie before this was There Will Be Blood.
That's an interesting question. What is his most famous movie? I guess that's the right answer. Maybe Boogie Nights, but I might be slanted on Boogie Nights because it was so big when I was a youth. But, you know, I don't know if people see it the same way as people who are 90s kids do.
Right.
I think it's definitely one of the two. I think for, it just depends on who you're talking to. I think for a lot of people in our similar age bracket, the first movie that they might have seen at the theater would have been Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah, totally. Mm. Yeah, I think that for sure. Like Punch Drunk Love, Magnolia, and There Will Be Blood feel like the three, like most, like I'm a little bit younger. I'm a
Uh-oh.
Little bit of a baby.
Uh-oh.
So
Uh-oh.
I didn't know who Paul Thomas Anderson was until There Will Be Blood, which is maybe
that's
also
okay.
a,
wow.
that's a
okay.
problem.
Wow. That's okay.
I'm sorry. I think I had heard of Magnolia, but I didn't know, like, I didn't know his name until There Will Be Blood in like the Oscar run.
Well, One Battle After Another, his largest box office opening.
Yeah,
for
totally.
Sure. Working with the biggest movie star in the world, Leonardo DiCaprio. And telling an excitingly modern story,
yeah,
which I think is so interesting because of how long it takes to make
mm-hmm.
movies.
Yeah,
that it almost, I know it's not like serendipity exactly, but
right.
it seems a little serendipitous that something that seems so topical comes out exactly when it's so topical.
It's pretty incredible. I also, I've talked to a couple other people who feel this way also, where a lot of movies, when they try to make a strong statement about the current times, it usually feels so bad and like flops pretty hard and like just makes, doesn't make you reflect on the current times, but instead just makes you irritated and feel like upset that you went to the movies and this is what you're getting. One Battle After Another, I think, is pretty notable in the sense that it is extremely prescient, extremely relevant to the modern time, but doesn't feel like locked in 2025. Right. Like you watch, I'm thinking specifically of Eddington, which came out earlier this year, which
Eddington.
Did you see Eddington? Did you guys
we
see
have
Eddington?
Not
no, but
Eddington
I feel
yet.
Like now I don't have to.
Yeah, you definitely don't. I think it's, they're doing two different projects, but Eddington is so, like, I cannot imagine what it will be like to watch that in 10 years and how insane it will feel versus One Battle After Another, which feels actually quite timeless despite it having significant prescience to today.
It does. It's interesting to think about that this was filmed, you know, before, obviously,
just the current moment.
The election, the current moment. And like that somehow just didn't.
He's been writing it for 20 years.
But he's been writing it for 20 years.
Turns out these things are, turns out they've always been relevant, actually. And
sadly.
I think that's what makes it actually, I think, really effective is that it doesn't feel, it feels like it's speaking to today, but it does feel like, these are things that have been happening for years. Like this kind of, so for those who don't know, One Battle After Another is like a very loose adaptation of a Thomas Pynchon novel called Vineland, which I have not read. But it is, it's kind of more of a, it's like inspired by Vineland is how I have understood it to be, which is the novel is about a bunch of like counterculture revolutionaries in the 60s who are kind of like, you know, bumbling, like it kind of like counterculture, like burnout hippies. And then it jumps to like the 90s where we then follow the main character. And One Battle After Another is different in the sense that it is about these kind of more modern revolutionaries who don't really feel bumbling to me at all, but feel actually quite empowered. And then it jumps, unclear if we're jumping forward into the future.
It says 16 years into the future.
No, totally. But I just mean like, does it take, I mean, it must be, it's kind of like, it's a little bit of a sci-fi movie in that way where it jumps pretty far into the future, but the world is almost exactly the same as the one that we have today in this way that I think is actually really compelling. And I do love when movies have like that little like gentle, like we're not going to do anything big sci-fi, but there's just going to be like little things that indicate to you that it's slightly different from the world that we live in.
Yeah, it's slightly different, but I don't know if I would be able to pick out how, because there are moments that feel exactly right now, and then there are some that are more far-fetched. And I was thinking about a lot too, like you know, like Gen X's kind of part in this.
Yeah. speak to that.
Like, you know,
PTA, Gen Xer.
Yeah, totally.
He's a Gen Xer. And then, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio's like burnout kind of like that he's, you know, started out incredibly, you know, with all these ideals and then just got like tired.
Yeah, actually, that's true. Like, it does really feel like, I mean, it's a movie about like generational handoff of like So to give like a very casual plot summary, which will be difficult, which we are probably going to spoil this movie.
Yeah, spoilers.
For those who haven't seen it, it's still out.
We're not going to spoil anything. Well, the plot summary is not going to spoil.
It's another, it's right? Like Amanda and I talk about all the time too. It is kind of one of those movies where it is less about what happens and more about how it all unfolds.
That foreshadows a quote I'm going to drop later.
Oh, love.
Wow.
But I do think it is. It's a movie that, like, if you want to see it without any information, don't listen to us right now. But yeah, if you're okay, if you've seen it or if you're okay with hearing about it, we will be talking about it. What's up? Oh, okay. But so, a, like, very casual plot summary. Leonardo DiCaprio plays a, like at the very beginning of the movie, it opens with
the French 75.
The French 75 is a group of revolutionaries who are trying to, like, kind of their main goal that we see them achieving is breaking out people in immigration detention. But they are also kind of just generally like, quote unquote, fighting the power, if you will.
Perfidia Beverly Hills, played by Tiana Taylor, is kind of like the leader-ish person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she and Leonardo DiCaprio, whose name is Pat, are in a relationship together.
Ghetto Pat.
And we kind of follow the exploits of this group until things kind of go south, and Teyana Taylor gets caught, and she gives up the names of some of the other members of the French 75. And so things devolve completely. It's, you know, they get it over their heads, and it all kind of implodes. And then we have a time jump to 16 years in the future, where kind of like the main meat of the movie is about Leonardo DiCaprio then living with his daughter, who is also Perfidia's daughter, kind of alone in the woods and trying to evade any notice by the government, who like previously disbanded the French 75.
And specifically somebody named Colonel Lockjaw.
Stephen Lockjaw.
Played phenomenally by Sean Penn.
Yeah.
In a unbelievable
nasty performance. Absolutely nasty.
Nasty. Crazy walk.
Crazy. Disgusting.
Disgusting.
It is one of those. I was talking to a friend of the show, Becca, the other night, who like enjoyed this movie but felt really complicated about watching Sean Penn because he is like an extremely bad person. But I think his performance, his performance is kind of enhanced by knowing that he's a bad person, and like does such a good job of being absolutely disgusting and reprehensible.
It is beautiful.
Is it wrong that I'm like somewhat like, maybe it's okay if a bad person plays like a really bad person, yeah, and then you're like, hey,
well, great work.
You are the worst in all ways.
It enriches it for sure.
it feels in all ends of the thing, like, yeah, complete.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because maybe he wasn't acting so much at all.
Could be.
Maybe he's.
I mean, he is definitely like doing. He's doing a strong performance.
It was strong.
Yeah. But so the movie kind of becomes a story about
Leonardo DiCaprio trying to find his daughter.
After she is kind of like their fragile peace that they've had for 16 years is broken by the reintroduction of Stephen J. Lockjaw into their lives.
Stephen J. Lockjaw.
I read a couple of reviews today because I was like, I just want to know what the people are saying.
I read some reviews too, and I thought it was interesting. Some of them were saying that, you know, the things like the political themes, mm-hmm, were hollow, but not necessarily in a bad way. Mm. And I felt confused by that because I felt incredibly energized,
yeah,
by what I saw in the movie. And
me
maybe
too.
Part of it is like that I was like, wow, can we actually allow something to make fascism look this stupid?
Right. I do. It's interesting. I've like talked to a couple of people about this also, and I understand that perspective, but I just didn't feel it while watching it. Like, I don't think it's in the text of the film, really. Like, it feels very, I don't know. It really does feel, I mean, ultimately, like, the movie is about, like, a father-daughter relationship and, like, trying to parent under these, like, terrible circumstances.
Yeah.
But the French 75 feels, like, honored in the movie. Like, they don't feel, mm-hmm, like they're, you know, they're like grasping at straws. It feels like they're doing something important, and like the movie feels like it really respects that. And
I'm then, like, sign me up.
Right. And then we also later in the movie get Benicio del Toro.
Sensei.
So
I saw this movie twice in theaters.
Yes,
like almost the day after, and I went and saw it in IMAX.
Yes.
Which, if you can, I highly recommend. It's phenomenal.
Amazing.
On the big screen. And there is a long sort of, I don't want to know if it's a scene or sequence, mm-hmm, of basically when Benicio del Toro gets introduced into Bob Ferguson, mm-hmm, Leo's life, and Leo is running with, like, through this journey of, you know, Benicio del Toro is running like an underground railroad for illegal immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And this is such a phenomenal sequence, and I found it just to be one of the best that PTA has ever put on film. So energizing to me, and it just illustrates this moment we're in with, like, I think the best. It just felt like living in today.
Yeah, totally.
And it's so strange living right now, I think, sometimes, because we're in crazy times. Things are not normal. We don't really want to talk about them too, mm-hmm, much, because it's not fun. And yet I would have such a hard time, I think, being an artist with a voice and putting out things that we're not addressing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so that's why the criticism of this rings so hollow because it's like, okay, somebody put it all on the line and illustrated what is happening.
Yeah.
And did it in a way that I can laugh at.
Yeah, it's like an insanely entertaining
movie. So much fun.
It's almost an impossible needle that is threaded, absolutely. And it's magic.
Yeah.
It's pure magic.
I do. I am like so upon like watching One Battle After Another and then also rewatching some of his other movies. Like one of the things I'm so struck by is how sensitive and nuanced all of his portrayals are of like all people. Like it's so like One Battle After Another, I think could be a disaster. Like it could easily be a disaster. Like nothing on the description is something that would ever be entertaining.
Because it's like it's a propulsive action film. It has one of the best ending chase sequences I've ever seen.
Good.
With like zero special effects, just pure cinematography.
Yeah, incredible. It's beautiful
and it's hilarious.
Yeah,
at times
it's so funny. Yeah,
and it's beautiful to look at too. It is a gorgeously shot movie. I don't know. It is a very impressive, and we're all going to reveal our rankings of PTA's 10
films. Yeah, hold
on.
I'm so scared.
I don't want to step on that. We can start there, but I did have a quote I wanted to read because
please. I love when you bring a quote, Chuck.
So Paul Thomas Anderson's first film is Heart Eight, which came out a year or two before Boogie Nights. Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
I'm so glad you guys watched it because I did not.
Roger Ebert reviewed it. Gave it 3.5 out of 4 stars.
Okay, King. All right. And read the quote.
Yeah,
the movie
that.
Isn't about plot. It's about these specific people in this place and time, and that's why it's so good. It listens and sees. It observes. And in that, it takes its lead from its main character. And
that's
I think
amazing.
That could apply to
every single
movie
one.
Literally all
it's crazy to have that on your first movie. And that applies across the board.
It's like, genuinely, I think the reason why people find his work so compelling is that it really, the plots are so different from all of these movies. They're all handling completely different things. Like, again, like, upon rewatching and reconsidering all of the movies that he's made, it's like, several of them have things in common, but they're all doing really different things, and yet they're all so compelling because they're just about people and the people are so rich.
And so many of them are about like these shifting power dynamics between people. And how can that not just be fascinating to watch, especially when it's just wrapped in like pure aesthetic delight?
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's
the
like,
ultimate.
They're effect. So well made. It's just like, it's
so
crazy.
Beautiful. Like I could watch any one of his movies probably on mute and just be like, this is gorgeous. I'm
so
just going to soak this in. And I one thing I really appreciate too is it's not super clean.
Yeah.
Something I hate about watching a lot of series and things right now is everything almost has the same look.
Mm-hmm.
It's like super sharp. It's too glossy.
Yeah.
It's too
totally.
It's too cleaned up, and I can't stand it. And when I tune into one of his, I'm gonna get him. For me it almost becomes unwatchable. And when I tune into one of his and you can like see these kind of like shifting perspectives and like a human moving the camera and just like the beauty of film, it's just a pure delight.
We watched Phantom Thread last night.
That's my beauty bath.
And there's so much texture you could almost like bite into it.
It's
phenomenal.
So good. Yeah. I sent both of these guys a like random clip I found on YouTube that like somebody like tweeted that is just it's like film testing for the different kinds of film that they were deciding to use for Phantom Thread.
Yes.
And it's just like shots of like Vicky Cripps just like looking into like the middle distance while the light changes on her face. And it's not even the film that they chose, but it's so beautiful. And just like these movies are so meticulously crafted. Like it's really interesting. It's like a 6-minute clip of like Paul Thomas Anderson just talking about the process of choosing what film and what lighting to use and like the makeup testing and what kind of fabrics they were going to choose to like dress the actors in. And it's just, despite me not really knowing anything about movies, it's so compelling to just like listen to a guy who's like, we just like making these micro decisions to make everything look perfect. And but you're right, like not glossy, just like meticulously crafted for the specific like vision that they're trying to impart. It's so
good. Like as a painter, I'm just like
yes. I've been thinking about you as I've been rewatching them, because it is like it's got huge like you know this is just I'm just looking at a series of paintings.
That's energy. How it feels.
Yeah,
and it's amazing that one battle enough after another, even though it's so action driven, it still felt like
it's gorgeous. It's so beautiful.
Just like the desert. Oh, and he has like a real way with the desert in many of his films. Mm-hmm. He clearly has like a great affection towards like that California.
Yeah, it's like the California of it all. So yeah, it's a huge part of it.
He's a California native.
Yeah, totally.
Is he really? Is he from LA or?
Born in LA and then grew up in the San Fernando Valley.
Big LA energy.
Yeah.
Big that huge guy.
And there is, you know, people have talked about this one battle after another and how he must have been just in LA and watching what's going on around him. He has young children and just kind of I feel like you can feel him in this movie more than others of his.
Absolutely. By far. It feels very much like autobiographical. Yeah. I don't know how much of that is true, but it's so
I mean, he has a, you know,
a biracial daughter. Yeah, totally. Where it's, I was thinking about that a lot because it is this movie, One Battle After Another. I feel like it could, I don't know, like part of, I think why it's successful is that it is really just a story about how hard it is, or like how difficult it must be to parent in this moment, especially as like a burnout, like pothead white dad to like a biracial daughter who's like dealing with this really complicated and hard world. And it feels so, I think part of what makes it so moving is that you feel that genuine like love and like fear and stress about like how do I do this without messing it up so bad? How do I like protect this person I love so much from this horrible world that we have no choice but to live in.
Yeah, the love definitely came through for me. I wonder if we can talk a little too about scores and a glorious PTA strategic needle drop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You want to talk about the needle drops, baby?
I do. Well,
I thought about this needle drop so much. I think you're going to talk about the one. And
I talk about a few, but yeah.
But there's like the soundtrack on Boogie Nights is so impressive.
It's so good.
And it's so fun.
I think that it's so important to remember in 1995, '96, '97 when he was conceiving of releasing this movie, the internet didn't exist.
Yeah,
there was no Spotify playlist of the best hits of the 70s.
Get them.
Like so that when the Boogie Nights soundtracks came out, they were absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah,
his
totally.
Mastery of that era's music, that was the first time I'd ever heard Sister Christian.
Yeah.
Oh, I will really?
Never, yeah.
Wow, it was amazing. I don't know. Yeah, I know you're right. Yeah.
I was like, whenever I hear Jesse's Girl, I see Mark Wahlberg's face.
I see Melina dancing in a row.
And so I think it's kind of easy to forget his, like, he knows music so well, because he hasn't had it in most of his movies since.
The last couple have
until
all been
this movie.
The score. Yeah, totally. Just a score.
And your needle drops, that final needle drop.
It's really good.
I love Tom Petty very much. I love Tom Petty maybe even more than I love PTA. I'll just put
nothing
that
wrong with
that.
No,
you do.
Yeah.
You 100%
and like, that for me, the again, and you know, if you're listening by now, you don't worry about spoilers. Ending it with American Girl for me was like some kind of insane masterstroke.
Yeah.
Like, because that song to me is, I felt that way about that song. I've never felt like it was like, you know, more of a MAGA American Girl.
Oh, no. Yeah, totally. No.
It's felt like the kind of like generation and spirit that I feel from that song. It somehow just like perfectly encapsulated in that moment. Truly special needle drop.
Yeah. No, it first of all, teared up, which is amazing. On that needle drop, and just I think it redefined that song in a way. It was it was a masterstroke.
It was special.
Yeah,
part of I think what makes the politics of that movie work too is that the ending feels so hopeful and so loving, and it's like that ending on American Girl.
Yeah,
it
felt like boom.
That's really nice. That's really nice. Actually, I needed that.
That was really nice, and that song is so beautiful. Chuck and I the other day were talking about PTA. and the blessed Johnny Greenwood, mm-hmm. and so we went through and we watched basically every single one of his movies.
You guys did such good
in
work.
The last 5 days.
What a pure delight.
The best guests on earth.
And we were thinking about the massive shift in mm-hmm. his filmmaking as soon as he starts working with Johnny.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, as much as I love Boogie Nights and it's a really fun score, boy, does he really start to like hit his stride when he starts working with Greenwood.
Absolutely.
Which happens at One Battle Out. Sorry, not.
No.
There will be blood.
There will be blood. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's since then. It's 6 movies in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The score is stunning. Yeah, it's so stunning. I mean, we were talking about this very briefly earlier, and then I was like, we can't talk about this anymore. I rewatched The Master the other night, which I'd only seen once, and I watched it while working. Oops, instead of actually watching it with my eyes. I know. I was dumb. It was dumb. It was like 8 years ago.
It's okay.
We grow. But it was so nice to watch it like not like fully engaged and like fully locked in. And that score also, one that I don't think, like I never really hear people talk about the score of that movie, is also incredible.
It's so good.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Oh man.
All right, let's do our rankings.
Yeah, you want to do our rankings?
So we want to do our PTA as 10 movies. We've each written down our rankings.
A few small movies.
And if we get the rankings out of the day, we're going to play a PTA game after that. We'll
we've got time. It's 7:35. Okay. We're like doing a great job. Yeah, we didn't even talk about the car chase at the end.
I know, but I want to.
I do too.
And I want to talk about Sensei's Little Dance.
I know.
I want to talk about having a few small beers
with my friends. Having a few small beers with my friends. Who wants to go first? Chuck, I feel like you are.
Chuck.
I think you should because I don't want to.
Do it.
Okay, I'm going to read my rankings in reverse. So number 10, Hard Eight. Number 9, Inherent Vice. Number 8, Punch Drunk Love. Number 7, Magnolia. Number 6, The Master. Number 5, Licorice Pizza. Number 4, There Will Be Blood. Number 3, Phantom Thread. Number 2, ooh, One Battle After Another. Number 1, Boogie Nights.
Wow.
This Boogie Nights stand.
I'm being true to myself.
Yes,
I'm being true to myself.
You have to be true to yourself. This is the thing. I struggled with this all day. We talked about this also last week.
It's not even how I've ever written down.
Look, I mean, that's the thing. That's why you have to be true to your heart. We talked about this last week. We talked about whether like ranking your favorites versus ranking what is like quote unquote best, which like in my opinion, what is best? I don't even know what that means.
I don't even know if I could.
I made a list for both because I am a doctor.
You are a doctor. That's actually so true.
The thing is which list should. So that was important to say is that those were Chuck's favorites, not necessarily on merit.
But I also but
they're my favorites on merit.
Is. I understand the distinction because
I divorce
like
the
best
two.
Versus your favorite. But to me,
not
like
the
best is my favorite at this point in my life.
That's time. Very fair. I made two lists.
I love that.
Dr. Siebers and
are you going to read them both? Are you gonna have to pick one?
I will warn you, when you are saying the number and then you say Hard Eight, it becomes tricky to say the next number.
Yeah.
I
almost slipped right up there.
I didn't number it, and I'm just like, okay. I'm just gonna go.
Okay. Just go
bottom to top.
Okay. Do it. Yeah.
Ascending. You know the numbers. Okay. So I'm gonna go bottom Inherent Vice, Hard Eight, Magnolia, Punch Drunk Love, Licorice Pizza, The Master, Boogie Nights, One Battle After Another, There Will Be Blood, Phantom Thread.
Yeah, baby. That's what I'm talking about. That's the threadhead I know and love.
When I read this out loud, I felt pretty good about
it. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, that's a really good ranking. I feel pretty on there with you. I am a little baby. I can't do it. I just don't have a real ranking. Didn't rewatch all of them. I've never seen Hard Eight. So Hard Eight is simply not involved in my lineup.
I am
kind of in like a tier section, but I'll read them in my order of my tiers anyway. My tears that I'm crying on my face. Hard Eight, because I haven't seen it. Magnolia. This is from bottom to top. Punch Drunk Love. Inherent Vice. Boogie Nights. Licorice Pizza. The Master. One Battle After Another. There Will Be Blood. Phantom Thread.
Okay, so we aligned on the top three. That's pretty much very the same. Interesting. Yeah. That's so it's tough because like the more you think about it, the harder it gets.
It's hard. I want to shuffle them immediately. As soon as I said it, I was like, that wasn't right.
I think Punch Drunk Love is underrated.
I agree. I've only seen it once, so it's like, this is the problem.
I've really seen it like three times, and it does grow on you, and it is like kind of a departure into his more mature filmmaking.
Yeah. These are all amazing.
That's movies. Why they're no loser.
That's why it's
so
difficult.
The first seven movies on this list are 5-star movies.
I know, like Magnolia's at the bottom of my list, and like sometimes I think about the part at the end where the kid says, like, this really happens or whatever he says.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a thing that happens. And I like tear up a little bit just because it is moving. And it's like, that's not, it's the bottom of my list.
It was very interesting. We rewatched Magnolia yesterday as well. Just kidding. It was like 2 days.
I was like, whoa, you really like locked in yesterday.
Locked in.
It's really interesting seeing like his collaboration with John Bryan on the score in that movie versus There Will Be Blood and Johnny Greenwood. I think those are, it's, because they're only separated by one movie.
Yeah, totally.
And they seem to heavily define his filmmaking style, depending on who he's working with. It's kind of phenomenal.
Yeah, totally.
That's like, I think in Magnolia, when I watched it, I was like, I just Tom Cruise maxed.
It's
and I can't believe he didn't win anything
it's
for that.
It's so crazy.
So good.
Incorrectly on the show when I talked about Magnolia, I was like, I think he won an Oscar for this, and I was wrong. I was just wrong.
But like, you're right, because he did.
He should have, obviously,
because like, it's that good. It is so
it just
extreme.
Feels like it. It feels like he should have.
I can't believe he didn't. It's that good. Performance is
Frank
astounding.
T.J. Mackey.
Yeah. Incredible
stage name.
Like, it's also like again, that's the other like these movies are so funny, like they're so good,
they're so funny. Phantom Thread is, I think, God, it makes me laugh throughout the entire thing.
A comedy.
It's truly one of the finest films I've ever seen. It's so good.
The sound design around A Piece of Toast, like, it still is comedic gold every time when she's like scraping it and he's like, I feel like you just rode a horse across the room.
It's amazing. It's so good.
It's
what's
so
his quote
funny.
About being impressed by his own gallantry?
Oh my God. He says he's impressed by his own gallantry by him eating the asparagus the way that she prepared it, because he likes it with oil and salt and she made it with butter.
Unbelievable.
And he's like, are you a secret agent?
He was an assassin come to send me? sent to kill me?
It's,
have you been sent here?
He is so grumpy most relatable way, because I'm just like, it's true. If you ruin my breakfast, my day is done.
I love lately, the last couple of times we've talked about Phantom Thread, Ellen has been like, I really relate to Reynolds Woodcock.
I do, and I know that might not be very flattering, but
I think
here
it's
I am.
Amazing. I think
why,
it's incredible.
Why do you relate to him?
Because it's not just like a movie about these relationships, but it's a movie about devoting your life to something that you love, that's a deep part of you, in a way that I think can be seen as kind of bizarre. But as a person who was fortunate enough to spend a lot of my time that way, it like really cooks on both ends and it turns you into a real particular weirdo. Yeah. And there's not a lot of content about like what that does to you when you're
totally.
Like trying to live in like harnessed creativity. That's a fascinating environment.
Yes, dude.
So let's just do it. I wanted to do a PTA draft.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So
we
all three will choose a main character, a supporting character, a bit character, and then a favorite scene. And we maybe if we have enough time, we'll just keep going on the favorite.
Can
lines,
I do the draft, the NFL draft noise just once?
You do it.
Dun 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 dun. Dun.
Oh wow,
that was really good.
So we'll snake draft this. So Jenny,
we're
you start.
Snake draft.
I'm gonna start. Do I have to start with main character? Or
yeah.
Do I, oh, okay.
You have to draft.
And then
so
I
whoever
get
gets
main
drafted,
and then
yeah.
Okay. Wow. I'm going to go with Reynolds Woodcock.
Wow. Sorry. Stealing Alan's pick right out from under
Look, you
nose.
Told me to go first, and I haven't thought about this at all because you told me about it right before we started started going on air.
So I'm a little... sorry. Are we talking about... all right.
Yeah, what is the goal of the draft? Just your faves?
This is for your faves. Team.
Got it. My team is going to play football. But is the game... Oh, I see. The goal is to have the best assembly.
All right, guys.
Okay, got it.
I'm going in with the big guns. I'm taking Jack Horner from Boogie Ooh, Nights.
Wow. That's a really good one. I mean, he's amazing.
completely resuscitated Burt Reynolds' career.
Yes. I mean, he's so good in it. Yeah.
I was saying that Burt Reynolds is almost like an onomatopoeia because like a Burt Reynolds sounds and acts
exactly like a Burt Reynolds. Yeah.
So I'm going to go Lancaster Dodd here.
Ooh, also really good.
And I think that Philip Seymour Hoffman and Daniel Day-Lewis are the two greatest actors of our time. Yeah. And I think that he got the two greatest performances out of them. I think this is Philip Seymour Hoffman's best role. I think Reynolds Woodcock is Daniel Day-Lewis's best role.
So good.
And it's crazy.
Not Daniel Plainview?
I mean, you could...
I can't believe none of us took Daniel.
I know, kind of messed up.
Oh my God.
Here's why I actually think it's Reynolds Woodcock is because I do think Daniel Plainview is phenomenal. I think there is enough in common with his role in Gangs of New York.
Oh, yeah, totally.
That
I don't like that take at all.
There's enough in common
take
with it.
Take that back. I don't know
you're
what you're
very
saying.
Very different accent work.
He is phenomenal in Gangs of New York as well.
No, he's amazing, but that movie is garbage.
I haven't seen Gangs of New York since I was in high school, and I remember it being pretty bad.
No, he's amazing. He's always amazing. Yeah. But
all right, so I get to pick support here. I'm going.
It will go back the other direction. Yeah.
Reed Rothschild, John C. Riley's character
really
in Boogie Nights. Which is...
He's
so good when he's doing magic.
He's doing magic.
Oh my God. I didn't remember that movie at all. And watching it last night, I was like, God, it's
that
so good.
Opening scene when he's introduced and he's making the margaritas and he's talking about how much do you squat and bend.
So good. And
he's like, you say first.
No, you will say it at the same time. It's incredible.
Is one of my favorite. I mean, that's almost my favorite scene, too. So,
I'm so good.
I'm taking him.
So I'm taking this draft as people, I actually think would be valuable in my life in some way. I think Jack Horner, again, Boogie
You're
Nights
going
is
twice in a row.
Is about chosen family.
It is.
And how lovely
it's
is
so
that?
So beautiful.
So I'm gonna take Cyril Woodcock.
Yes.
Because
she's
gonna just run my life.
She's so good, dude.
The part where she tells him when they get in a fight and she's like, Don't pick me in a fight, you will lose. I will run right through you. You will not come out alive. And he just shuts up. I'm just like, yes,
amazing.
Queen.
God,
it's incredible.
So good.
Yes.
She's so good.
Do you think she's closeted in that movie? Quick question.
Is the closet clear? we never see her with anybody, but I don't think I don't think she's hiding anything.
Okay.
Yeah, Cyril's got her. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah, okay.
She knows what she's about.
Just checking.
She's unbelievably self-possessed. Yeah. supporting. I'm so sorry. It's crazy that neither of you chose this. I'm taking Sensei. Benicio Del Toro.
I know.
Obviously, Sensei is the best forever.
No, you're right.
It is such an incredible performance.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
He's so good. It's also so sweet to have him as the contrast to the French 75, who are flawed but doing their best, and he is genuinely succeeding. It's so moving, and also he's so funny.
So I don't know if you both read any of this, but he apparently really defined that role. Came in and gave it so much more meat, and that his request from PTA was that if I'm just reacting to anything going on around me, to tell me to tone it down.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't react to anything happening.
Ocean yeah. Kind waves, of amazing. Especially waves. To Leo. He's like, if you see me reacting to Leo's energy, like you have, like we have to do
tone
it again.
Me down. That's really cool. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's like he gets the, like, I'm obsessed with all of the little moments in that movie. Like when Bob is on the phone trying to remember the password and he's like, he's supposed to say what time it is. And Benicio del Toro is just watching his face and he's like, it's 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And then the other one is like when Bob is trying to like plug in his phone. There's like this incredible sequence where Benicio del Toro is taking him through this like kind of labyrinthine apartment complex that he has. And Bob is trying to plug in his phone for more than like 30 seconds at a time, but they keep moving. And there's a moment where Sensei like turns and is like yelling at a kid who's
get off
like,
the phone.
He's like, get off the phone and man the door. But like Leonardo DiCaprio thinks he's yelling at him. So he's like, oh, sorry. And like unplugs his phone and starts like following him. It's so funny.
It's so nice to see good. Like another example be like, that's what I want to be when I grow up.
Yes. I want to be like Sensei.
I want to be like Sensei and Cyril somehow.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, can I have both?
Sensei, Sun, Cyril Rising. Yeah. Like, literally.
I just love when he's like, hey, it's me again, Bob Ferguson.
It's so good. It's so funny. It's just like, God, what a good time of the movie.
Leo crashing out is a beautiful thing.
So good. Some of the best phone acting in a movie ever.
He's so good at playing somebody who's, like, really dumb and, like, trying his best.
Oh, I know. Like, he's really trying.
He's trying so hard, but he's just so such a burnout. He can't do it. It's so good.
So, Snake Draft, now that you are picking your bit, I think
you go first, right?
Yeah, Jenny, your turn.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a snake.
But Ellen's never gone first, though.
Snake draft.
I never will. I'm learning. So I get to pick my bit part.
Yeah.
I would like to pick Philip Seymour Hoffman from Boogie Nights.
Oh, yes.
Scotty. I'm obsessed with him.
Scotty!
It was so nice to rewatch it.
Oh, my gosh.
I love him so much.
Amazing.
I want to take him home with me and told him.
So when I saw Scotty in those first, and he's wearing the tank top, oh, I was like, that's how I feel in my summer clothes for 3 months.
Yeah.
I'm just like,
those are just like a little too tight.
That's how I feel.
He's so cute.
Yeah, from June until August, yes, for sure. Yes.
Living my Scotty life, trying to kiss Mark Wahlberg, and he doesn't want me to.
I love that Mark Wahlberg was like, I hope the Lord forgives me for this role.
What? Is that true?
Yeah,
I knew that. Look, here's the thing. I knew that Mark Wahlberg was, you know, bad guy because of his hate crime in Boston. But
well, that's what he wants to be forgiven for, though, Jenny.
That's so crazy. It's like, literally, I was watching it last night and I was like, he's like so good in this movie. He's so sweet.
Incredibly
and it's
funny.
Like crazy how cute and charming he is, so even though cute. I know he's Mark Wahlberg. And I'm like,
it's
disgusted to look upon.
It's really difficult to remember that this is his first serious role.
Yeah.
The first time I'd heard of Boogie Nights was, I went and found this article and reread it today. This article in the New York Times Magazine from 1997.
Mm-hmm.
That was about like how weird and unbelievable it was that Marky Mark was about to have what was almost in like an Academy Award
potential. Yeah. It's a great performance.
And he before that was really just known for like pulling his pants down,
being in the funky bunch,
and then I guess
it's for so much forgiveness. Yeah. It turns out
actually he should be forgiven for many things, and his performance in Boogie Nights is not one of them.
No, that's the least of the concerns. Yeah, here.
Like that's actually something you should be praised for.
It's the best thing you've ever done.
Goofy. Yeah.
Okay, wow. I'm gonna pick my bit role.
Yes,
and I'm gonna go with Brad the bartender with the braces and Magnolia.
Yes, dude. Oh, that's a really good one.
That made me laugh so much.
It's so good.
Like his gleaming braces. And like there's a great needle drop in that part with the Goodbye Stranger.
Oh,
is
playing. I love Goodbye Stranger.
Oh, yeah, that song is amazing. And that song's just ripping. And you see his just like shining braces.
He's so smiley.
He's so smiley. And he's just like, I love you, Brad.
That's so good. Oh, my God. Really good pick.
Yeah, I want Brad for my team.
I guess we're staying in the past here, but I can't not choose Rahan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yes.
Alfred Molina's Alfred character Molina. From Boogie Nights.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Yes.
It is. I think, you know, I can just go ahead and choose favorite scene now as well. And he's in that as well. Like that. Yes. That is one of my favorite movie scenes in any movie because it serves no purpose.
It's just beforehand,
he just goes like it says one more thing. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Like, it's like it could have been over.
Yeah, I just had to do one more 15 minutes here.
Just like, here's a little treat.
Yeah, and it's just spectacular. I love when... I really love Licorice Pizza.
I do, too. I think people give it a bad rap, and I don't understand why.
I don't understand why either. It's so fun.
And very similar to Boogie Nights, I think.
If I was choosing another bit role, it would be Bradley Cooper in that movie, playing John Peters.
He's so good. He's so good in Licorice Pizza.
And I love when a filmmaker... Yeah, I know this is not the way movies work, but it seems like he's just jamming on guitar.
Yeah.
He's just like, I'll play whatever I want.
Let's just go. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and that's the way that movie seems to me.
It is. Licorice Pizza and Boogie Nights both have that energy of like, this is just a series. I mean, kind of like that quote you read, that's just like, this is just a series of events happening, and like it doesn't necessarily feel it doesn't, the plot is kind of irrelevant. It's just what's going on with these characters for however many years. And it's so like, Licorice Pizza is so fun. It's just like people running over and over and over again, and I'm laughing.
It's
just smiling.
It's a joyful movie. Yeah. It's amazing.
It's so beautiful.
So for I'm going to pick one battle after another when Sean Penn like basically comes back from the dead just to be talking about a woman being a semen demon.
God. Disgusting.
Are you allowed to say that?
Oh.
Just keep talking.
That's a medical term.
Yes, true. As long as it's not lewd, we're fine. You're quoting a film.
That was so funny. And he just looks terrible. And he's like, it just talks about it so matter of factly. And that was just like, in all of that for that. And then to go into that office and to get gassed.
The funniest.
Was so beautiful.
I love that that's the office when he's like, I've made it. And it's just like.
And it's just an office.
Yeah. Like nothing just, particularly luxurious. I mean,
it's
that's
just
like
a fine office.
The banality of fascism, baby.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
It's so we also did not even talk about the Christmas Adventures Club.
No, I know.
Absolute
praise
insane.
Saint Nick.
Like absolute insane send up. Of these like fascist white nationalist
I love that he did think about like what is like the dumbest thing
it's
that
so,
we could have
it's
to
also
say.
So insanely Thomas Pynchon and isn't like it's not from Vineland like it feels so he's just vibing on it.
Right, Jenny, so favorite scene.
Jenny.
Oh, favorite scene.
Draft one.
Favorite scene is oh my God, it's so hard. Okay, pick one.
You just
Jenny.
Gotta pick
you
one pick for one. Your team.
You should have to pick one for my team. I like my instinct is to go with something from Phantom Thread, but because I already did that, I'm gonna pick something.
Go
from
with
the
your heart.
Masked. Well, no, I want
go,
you want to spread
go
it
with
out.
Your heart.
Look, I'm spreading out my draft. Okay, I'm gonna do it the way I want to do it. I'm gonna do
the smart strategy.
Prison scene in The Master between folks
Phoenix
because it's so good. Yes. It's so good.
Yeah.
I rewatching that movie really gave me a stronger appreciation for it.
Yeah.
It's like really incredible. I bounced off it a little bit the first time, but the second time was kind of like, this is crazy.
Freddie Quell is a bad, bad dog.
God, he's a bad, bad dog. Yeah. I mean, like there's so many, like also I'm like, oh, the
honorable
mentions. Scene actually also, but yeah.
Eli Sunday.
Oh
my
God.
Giving that first sermon is electric.
Totally. Oh,
electric.
God, for
it's
real.
Unbelievable.
I know.
Paul
and
Dano.
He's like, out, ghost.
Oh my God. There's
so
insane. Like, there's so many scenes that I'm just
know.
Like, not even thinking about.
And he's like, and when DDL is like, yes, I do. That part was like,
God.
When he's going in and out of like masking and not masking.
Yeah.
And that is, it's in
incredible.
The wide shot. We all know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
The wide shot. You're like, this is like the best acting all in all I've maybe ever seen.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, I can't believe I didn't even think about it.
I know.
I just like forgot.
New Year's scene in Phantom Thread, another honorable mention.
Oh,
just
so good.
Phenomenal.
The balloons.
The palette of those balloons.
It's so beautiful. It's a New Year's movie. Yeah. I always want to watch it at New Year's because it's so... Yeah. It's also, I mean... Look, it's really romantic.
It's
so
romantic.
beautiful.
I think he said about that movie, like, you, there's nothing like weirder or more mysterious about just like the at-home dynamics between two lovers.
Yeah, totally.
And that's
two
just
lunatics,
just crazy people.
True, like true freak for freak. Like, you got to find somebody who matches
it's
your
true.
Freak.
It's true. So beautiful. It is really beautiful. Ugh,
great. Man, yeah, that's my other honorable mention would have like the dinner scene when when he's God. Like, have you been sent here to kill me? So God. Just great. The thing is, great movies. Great I don't movies. Know what to tell
so,
you.
So such, and I know, and we're ranking, and I'm like, we're just going from good to best.
Yeah.
Like, and what an incredible.
He has not made anything close to a bad movie.
No, he hasn't. They're it's great. Just like, what's your vibe? What's your favorite? Yeah,
truly, I do think it is like truly a vibe test where it's like, what's the thing? Because I do like it a is. Lot of his movies have, like, I'm thinking about Boogie Nights and Licorice Pizza being feeling very like in the same genre and like,
yeah,
The Master, There Will Be Blood, Phantom Thread, also all kind of are speaking in the same language, like cinematic language. Yes. Like, there's something really, there's a little, you know, you can find your little niche and hang out in there for a while.
Just amazing to watch a filmmaker do so much growth
yeah.
and
yeah.
not backtrack.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
even